Are we on? Anthony hands me this, and he says, don't touch it, ever. So I'm at the girls' basketball game the other day, and down in Northridge here, and Barb Rogie comes in. I don't know why. She must have somebody playing. But so I said, I give Barb a hug, and I say, Barb, when'd you get home? And she says, well, you hugged me in church last Sunday, so. You know, Pastor Adrian, you know, the last 3 weeks we spent on, I've talked about kind of what happens, where we go after we die, and that kind of thing, just to encourage you guys a little bit. Today it's going to be a little bit different. Today we're going to see how great God is, and that everything we are discovering, God already told us about. It's just taking us time to catch up. Pastor Adrian Rogers said this: when science and the Bible don't agree, just give science a little time and maybe it'll catch up. Imagine if I told you guys we're going to do an experiment. It's going to take 1,600 years. And what we're going to do is we're going to randomly pick 13 people or 39 people from 13 countries around the world. And none of them are ever going to meet each other, and none of them are going to know what's going on with the other ones. And we're going to tell these people, okay, I want you to write us a story. And so the people over here in North America write a story, and the people in Europe start writing a story, and the people in Africa start writing a story, and they die off, and then more people write, and they die off, and then more people write, and they die off. And now we're 1,600 years down the road. Most of these people have never seen what any of the other people wrote. But let's say we collect all these writings at the end of this 1,600-year period, and we put them together in a book, and the book has one theme that runs through it from the very first page to the very last page. One story, one hero, one anti-hero that runs through the whole thing. What do you think the chances of that happening are? Well, that's what we have in what we call the Bible. 40 people, at least, wrote this Bible over 1,600 years. Most never met anybody else. Most didn't know what the other people were writing. But it has one theme, and it all comes together. And so today, good to see so many of you guys here. It's good to see a lot of the youngsters come out. When I use kids, I don't use it derogatorily. They tell me don't look down and breathe, because, yeah. Here's just some of the scientists who were Christians, very devout Christians. You guys should know some of these names. If you don't, then our schools have really failed you guys. Galileo, devout Christian, lived in the 1600s. He spent the last years of his life under house arrest by the Catholic Church. The reason he was put under house arrest is because he was the first one to say that the earth is not the center of the universe, and he was the first one to say that the earth spins on its axis. He found those things out from reading the Bible. Lise Mittner, you probably never heard of her, because she's a woman. She's a co-discoverer of nuclear fission during World War II. She was a German citizen, and they didn't like what she was doing, and so they kicked her out of Germany, and she came to the United States. What that allowed her to do, and allowed us to do, was develop the first atomic bomb, which led to the end of World War II. Her co-discoverer was a man named Otto Hahn. Otto got all the credit for the discovery, because he's a man, won the Nobel Peace Prize. But Lise was a very devoted Christian. Isaac Newton, you guys remember him, right? You guys ever hear the name Isaac Newton? Credited with discovering gravity and all that, right? His quote upon the discovery of gravity: gravity explains the motions of the planets, but it cannot explain who put the planets in motion. God governs all things, and God alone knows all that can be done. He left us a commentary on the book of Revelation. That commentary was 1,000,000 words long. Now, I studied Revelation with Kay Arthur. Some of you guys have heard this. 2 hours a day, 6 days a week for 2 years. Some of you guys studied Revelation through BSF for 2 years. And I guarantee you, we weren't even in the same galaxy as 1,000,000 words on the subject. But this is one of the most brilliant scientists that ever lived. In fact, he was in the same IQ range as Albert Einstein. He also discovered benzene, Benzene is a compound that allows chemicals to bond together and form new products, like plastic, for instance. All from Isaac Newton. Isaac Newton said this: if people have a little bit of philosophy, they will be atheists. As they gain a better understanding of philosophy, they will become Christians. Albert Einstein, no words are needed for him. Albert Einstein said this: science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind. God does not roll the dice. In other words, nothing happens by chance in God's creation. Joseph Lister, anybody want to have surgery without having anesthesia? Joseph Lister is the guy who discovered that. Very devoted Christian. It is going to be a history class. I did this just for you, Tim. Yes, sir. Gregor Mendel. Gregor Mendel is considered the father of genetics. He discovered that the egg and sperm cells each contain one gene that gives offspring the traits of both parents. And he also discovered something else pretty amazing. He discovered that God built into those first two cells, the egg and the sperm, he built into them an intimate knowledge and an intimate protection that allowed neither one of them to override the traits of the other one. Who could do that but God? That's why you have traits from your mom and your dad. He thought the only way to be a scientist was to be close to God. And being the great scientist that he was, he also lived his life as a monk so that he could study God's word every day. Lord Kelvin provided absolute temperature. You know, when you watch the weather at night on the news and they say it's going to be 62 today, but it's going to drop down to 39 tomorrow? That's because of what Lord Kelvin discovered. He discovered something else. He discovered that cables can run across the floor of the Atlantic Ocean. He did that by reading the Bible. And he said, he got an idea. He's reading his Bible and he thinks, we could probably find a faster way to communicate with our friends across the ocean than sending messages on boats that are going to take 6 months to get there or 3 months to get there. And so they laid the first transatlantic communications cable because he read his Bible. Louis Pasteur, devout Christian, what did he come up with? Pasteurization, that's right. He also showed that vaccines and immunization stop the spread of disease. Samuel Morse, anybody know that name? You guys should. He's the one that invented Morse code. Before young people, before we had cell phones and the internet and telephones and all those things, we communicated by sending tapped out messages across the wires, or you put somebody on a horse and send them on a journey. And the first message that he ever sent was, "What hath God wrought?" It is a quote from Numbers 23:23. Numbers 23:23 says, "What hath God wrought?" And it means this: look at the great thing God has done. Job chapter 26, verse 7. He spreads out the northern skies over empty space. He suspends the earth over nothing. You see, before we went to space, people thought that the earth was carried on the back of a big elephant or a big turtle, or a guy named Atlas carried the earth around on his back. They couldn't believe that it just hung there in space. It wasn't until about 4,000 years later, after God wrote this — Job, by the way, is the oldest writing in the human language, in the all of human languages — but it wasn't until we went to space that we discovered what the Bible said, that the earth just sits there and hangs on nothing. But the Bible told us that. It was also believed well into the 1500s that the only thing that existed is what we could see with our eyes. But 2,000 years ago, God said in Hebrews 11:3, in the New Living Translation, "By faith we understand that the entire universe was formed at God's command, that what we now see did not come from anything that cannot be seen." Or, that what we now see did not come from anything that can be seen. In other words, what he's saying is everything consists of things that we can't see, and we now know that's true. Cells and genes and atoms and these things consist everything. But we didn't know that until we invented the telescope and we could start seeing these things for ourselves. But God told us that 2,000 years ago. It'd be 15 centuries before we found these things out for ourselves. The Black Death arrived in Europe in October of 1347. 12 ships came ashore in Italy on the, carrying goods, and when the people went to get the goods, they found that almost all the sailors were dead, and those who weren't would die within a day or so. They were horrified at what had come to their shores. The Black Death arrived on the shores of Europe, and it would stay for 5 years. It would kill, estimates are, between 20 million and 50 million people died. Over one-third of the people of Europe. It was a fast-acting disease. If you laid down on your bed a perfectly healthy person tonight, they'll find you dead in the morning. That's how fast the disease worked. It was fast. That's why it spread so fast. As is usually the case, the Europeans blamed the Jews. And between 1348 and 1349, thousands of Jews were murdered because they thought they were responsible for the plague. Exodus chapter 10, verse 7 in the NIV. Pharaoh's officials said to him, to Pharaoh, "How long will this man be a snare to us? Let the people go so that they may worship the Lord their God. Do you not yet realize that Egypt is ruined?" This is after the eighth plague. Who are the people blaming for the plague? God? Nope. The Jews. They're blaming Moses. It's been like that throughout history. Even though God's the one who brought the plagues upon Egypt. Anyway, despite reports to the contrary, and you'll see a lot of things, it was a bubonic plague, it was this, it was that, there's still no conclusive evidence of what caused the plague to stop or what caused it to start. A lot of people say that it was fleas that bit rats, and then the fleas would get the disease from the rats, and then they would bite humans, and the humans would get the disease. The problem with that hypothesis is, of course, that we still have rats and fleas, and the rats and fleas still existed 5 years after the plague started, but the plague stopped anyway. So that's a problem with the theory. This probably isn't going to be pleasant, but it's needed to show you that Bible truth came before scientific discovery. The Black Death was named about 230 years after the plague, actually. And what would happen is the people would break out in boils, and the boils would break open, and they would leak blood and pus together, and they would be black. And that's how they got the name for the Black Death. It was fast-acting. It spread because they didn't pay attention to what God taught us in the Bible. Numbers 5:2 in the New Living Translation. "Command the people of Israel to remove from the camp anyone who has a skin disease or a discharge." What's that? That's boils on your skin that are leaking discharge. "Or who has become ceremonially unclean by touching a dead person." What God said is quarantine them. You know, if you don't want these guys to get sick, and these guys are already sick, then the thing to do is to keep these guys away from these guys. But they didn't do that. They would throw them in the riverbed. They would throw them in the open street. The ones they did bury, dogs would drag up and bring back into town. And so the plague kept spreading. If things had been done God's way, probably only a couple thousand instead of 20 to 50 million people would have died. But see, we tend to put our faith in science instead of in God. And we pay the price for that. In 1846, a man named Ignaz Semmelweis observed that women giving birth in hospitals died at a rate 5 times higher than women giving birth at home with midwives. And he set out to find out why this was so. And he came up with hypothesis after hypothesis, and he experimented for several years, and he couldn't come up with the answer. Until one day he observed something at the hospital. They had a basin of water, and what would happen is a doctor would deliver a baby over here, come over here and dip his hands in the water, and come over here and deliver another baby. And then the nurse would come along, and she'd dip her hands in that same water and come over here, deliver a baby. Then another doctor would deliver a baby, and they'd put their hands in the same water and they come over here and they deliver this baby, what are they doing? They're spreading germs from one person to another. So he started reading the Bible. He was challenged until his death on what he found, by the way. Listen, when hospitals finally listened to him, the death rate among moms went from 1 in 10 to less than 1 in 100 because of a simple thing that God told us. According to the Center for Disease Control, even today, 170,000 people die every year in our hospitals because the doctors or nurses don't wash their hands. Here's the thing. God told us 35 centuries ago about this. Leviticus 15, 13b, New American Standard. He shall then wash his clothes and bathe his body in running water and will become clean. See how simple that is? How many lives could have been saved if people put their trust in the Bible instead of in science? Even today, people don't believe that, and that's why so many people are dying in our hospitals. While we're on medical things, up until about 120 years ago, when you got sick, what you do is you come into the hospital and they thought you were sick because of your blood, and they would do what's called bloodletting, and they would put leeches on you or other methods, and they'd pull the blood out of you. They thought that's how you would get made well. In fact, George Washington died because of bloodletting. He died at the hands of his own doctors. He was ill, and so they took his blood, thinking that would cure him, and he didn't get any better, so they did it again, and he didn't get any better, so they did it a third time, and he died. He didn't have any blood left. That's how George Washington died. Lovely, huh? Leviticus 17:10, Part A, New Living Translation. For the life of the body is in its blood. Take away the blood, every living thing on earth, every animal, dies. But up until 120 years ago, we didn't know that. We should have, because God wrote it down for us 3,500 years ago, 35 centuries ago. But we put our faith in science instead of in God. One more for the medically inclined. Anybody knows what prothrombin is? Very good, Deb. Prothrombin is a coagulation of the blood. Coagulation means clotting. In a human's entire life, from the day you're born till the day you die, you know when the peak clotting occurs in your body? On day number 8. Genesis 17, 12a, New American Standard. And every male among you who is 8 days old shall be circumcised throughout your generations. Luke 1:59, New Living Translation. When the baby was 8 days old, they called for the circumcision. They all came for the circumcision ceremony. That's John the Baptist. Leviticus 12:3, NIV. On the 8th day, the boy is to be circumcised. You see, God told us thousands of years ago how to do things. We just don't want to believe him, and we don't want to pay attention to him. Listen, science is discovering these things, but God said it first. Nothing in the Bible is there by accident, not one word. More than 100 years before the birth of Christ, the leading astronomer of the day, how do you pronounce this, Tim Dead? Hipparchus? Anyway, we'll just call him John. The leading astronomer of the day, John, counted all the stars. There were exactly 1,022 stars in the universe, he said. 250 years later, the famed astronomer Ptolemy said that he was wrong. There's 1,056 stars in the universe. Jump ahead 1,300 years. Galileo, you'll remember him from discovering that the Earth was not the center of the universe and all that. He also invented the first telescope. And he learned the biblical truth when he pointed that telescope towards the heavens. He learned that there were too many stars to ever be counted. A scientific journal recently calculated that the stars in the heaven and the grains of sand on the beaches of the world are exactly the same. They could have saved themselves a lot of time and a lot of trouble if they had just read the Bible. Jeremiah 33:22, New Living Translation. And as the stars of the sky cannot be counted, and the sand on the seashore cannot be measured, so I will multiply the descendants of my servant David and the Levites who minister before me. Could have saved themselves a lot of trouble. See, God told us 3,500 years before it was discovered that it was true. Genesis 22:17, King James. Then in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of the heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gates of his enemies. Listen, here's the thing you need to notice, because your teachers, and when you go away to college, they're going to stand up there and they're going to tell you a thing, and you're going to think it's the absolute truth, because my professor has to be smarter, he wouldn't have that job. Listen, science continually changes. It changes every day. What's true today is not going to be true tomorrow in the world of science. But God's word has never changed. Not in 6,000 years. Not one word has been proven scientifically, archaeologically, or historically incorrect. Not one word. But you see how science keeps changing? A couple hundred years ago, there were only 1,022 stars in the sky. Now that we know there's too many to ever count. The Bible told us that. While on the stars and their number, let's go even more. Okay, Tim, you get to help me out. The stars in the constellation Pleiades, how do you pronounce that? Thank you. The stars in the constellation Pleiades all cluster together and are bound by gravity. So here it is. It's a galaxy, and there's all these stars, and they're just moving around the universe like this, but they're all clustered together by gravity. Okay, this is important to know. The Orion constellation, on the other hand, is loosely bound. So the Orion constellation galaxy is moving through space, but it's starting here, and it's getting further and further and further apart as it goes through the universe. God asked Job in Job 38:31, can you direct the movement of the stars, binding the cluster of, how do you pronounce it? Pleiades? Binding the cluster of Pleiades all together, or loosening the cords of Orion? See, 3,500 years before we discovered that truth, God already told us it was so. You're starting to see how science proves the Bible, not the other way around. The science community was all abliss in 2014. Actually, it was October 2014, 2 years and 3 months ago. They discovered that there were mountains on the bottom of the ocean. They discovered this 2 years ago. Jonah, chapter 2, verses 5 and 6, New Living Translation. This is after he gets thrown overboard. I sank beneath the waves, and the waters closed over me. Seaweed wrapped itself around my head. I sank down to the very roots of the mountains. I was imprisoned in the earth with gates locked shut forever. Whose gates locked shut forever? But you, O Lord, my God, snatched me from the jaws of death. You see what's happening to Jonah? He's thrown overboard. He's sinking to the bottom of the ocean, which is a miracle itself because he didn't die because of the pressure. And he sinks down to the very roots of the mountains that are looming up out of the sea. Some of these are taller than Mount Everest. We didn't know that until 2 years ago. But the Bible told us approximately 2,756 years ago that these things existed. It was believed for thousands of years that air had no weight. You guys think air has weight? Anybody? Can you hold a handful of air? Recently, meteorologists have discovered that clouds can hold thousands of tons of rain. For that to be possible, air has to have mass to keep the water up there. If anything has mass, it has weight. You guys, right? You guys are scientists, know that, right? If something has mass, it has to have weight. We believed air was weightless. But God told us about 4,000 years ago, in Job, again, the oldest writing in all of human history, when God fixed the weight of the wind and limited the water by measure. What's he telling us? Air has weight, and that weight contained in air determines how much water the clouds will hold before it starts raining. God told us that way before science discovered that. Who knows what the jet stream is? Tim, keep your head down. And I'm dead. Just because it's a military thing. The jet stream, you know who discovered the jet stream? The jet stream was discovered in World War II by pilots 70 years ago. That's it. You know what the jet stream is? This. We used to think that wind went one direction, boom, just kept going around, one direction. That's what we thought. Until pilots in World War II discovered that's not true. Now they use a jet stream to plot courses, like when we flew to China to get Caitlin, we knew what time of day to leave, where we need to fly, over top of the world or around the world, and they do that because of the jet stream. The plane's either getting pushed along or it's getting held up by wind. That's why it's important to know what the jet stream is. But God said 4,000 years ago in Ecclesiastes 1:6, the wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. See, 4,000 years before we knew it was a scientific fact, God told us it was. The point is, who are we going to put our faith and our trust in? Are you going to put it in science? Or are you going to put it in God? These are the two choices laid out before you. Here's evolution's number one dilemma. Okay? Several of you guys have asked me, and in my college, say, God bless you. Several of you guys have asked me, you know, my professor says this, and how do I combat him without being combative? What can I say? Here's the question you ask him. And I guarantee you they're not going to be able to answer this question. You guys all know the question, right? What came first? What is it? What came first, protein or DNA? See, here's the thing. DNA forms protein. But DNA can't form without protein. You see the dilemma? Which one came first? They had to be created at the same instant by an all-knowing God. Because you can't have one without the other. DNA cannot exist without protein. Protein cannot exist without DNA. See the dilemma? You guys, if you're confronted by your science teachers and their big evolution teachers, ask them that question. Then tell me which one came first. See, evolution can't explain those kind of things, but God can. The code to make protein is found in DNA, guys. Revelation 4:11, New Living Translation. You are worthy, O Lord, our God, to receive glory and honor and power. For you created all things, and they exist because you created what you pleased. Period. Simple. Right? If you're a Christian, you should accept that just because God said it. Period. Only a creator can do what science cannot explain. Science cannot explain how we got here, but the Bible does. The human body is comprised of 28 base elements. This same 28 base elements comprise, guess what? Who has a guess? 28 base elements in the human body. Pick up a handful of dirt, and there they are, the same 28 base elements. This might actually lead somebody to believe that God picked up a handful of dirt and breathed life into it and created the first man. Just like God said. Genesis 3:19. For you were made from dirt, from dust in this translation, and from dust you shall return. You starting to see how great God is? I could do this nonstop for a week. I won't. But I could. You see, here's the thing. Science is not discovering anything. I'm not putting scientists down. I'm just saying science is not discovering anything. God has already told us everything about every discovery that's ever been made in His Word. All we have to do is pay attention to what God's saying. Let's briefly turn our attention to archaeology, and we'll finish in a couple minutes here. Believe it or not, for most of our existence, skeptics said that the Bible was wrong because King David was not an actual person and he never actually existed. But in 1993, we found an upright stone used as a monument in Egypt with the inscription that said, "Belonging to the house of David, and then went on to describe the united kingdom of Israel and Judah. Okay, you had the Jews, you guys know this, right? You had the Jews, the southern kingdoms and the northern kingdoms, and they were divided kingdoms until under King David, he brought them together. Okay? It was actually in Solomon's reign. They brought them together. And here they found a stone proving what the Bible said all those years ago. Daniel 5:29, Holman Christian version. Then Belshazzar gave an order. This is the verse after the handwriting on the wall. Okay, you guys know the handwriting on the wall, right? This is the verse right after that. Then Belshazzar gave an order, and they clothed Daniel in purple, placed a gold chain around his neck, and issued a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. Here's why that's important, that he was the third ruler. Skeptics said for centuries that Daniel never existed and that the whole thing was a lie because no man named Belshazzar ever existed. Even in the list of Babylonian kings and rulers and the Persian kings and rulers, no name Belshazzar ever appeared. Outside the Bible, we had no evidence of it. And so they said Daniel didn't really exist. And then in 1853, a find named the Nabonidus cylinder was discovered. It's about 6 inches in length. The cylinder contains a prayer from the Babylonian king, Nabonidus, and the prayer was dedicated to his son, the co-regent, co-ruler, co-king named Belshazzar. Dad and son are ruling as co-kings. Daniel becomes the third ruler in the kingdom, just like the Bible said. You see, here's the thing. Whether science has discovered it yet, whether archaeologists have discovered it yet, whether historians have discovered it yet or not, are completely irrelevant, meaningless. God said it, and God has never been shown to be wrong. Never. Just because it took us around 2,430 years to find out that Belshazzar was a real person, it doesn't mean that for every one of those 2,430 years that it wasn't a fact. It just took us time to catch up. Bible skeptics also pointed to Caiaphas, the high priest, and saying that he never existed either. Until 1990, when we found an ossuary, we would call it a coffin today, was found, and it bore the name Joseph Caiaphas, which was his full name, as reported by Josephus, the Roman historian. Almost done. The Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered between 1946 and 1949. We don't know the exact date because the people that found them, at first they had no idea what they had, and when they realized what they had, they tried to sell them on the black market. So we don't know exactly when they were discovered. They date to around 200 B.C., The Dead Sea Scrolls, if you're not familiar with them, contain the texts of a lot of the Bible, exactly as we have the Bible today. They were found in caves, Qumran. In 1979, an archaeologist named Gabriel Barkay started to dig around a church in Jerusalem. He didn't get any funding, but he was given a bunch of 12 and 13-year-old kids to help with the archaeological dig. As the digging was winding down, they hadn't found anything. They had one kid who was particularly, let's say, rambunctious. And so he wanted to kind of get him out of the way for a while. And he told him, why don't you go over there and start cleaning up the floor for me? And the kid went over and he started cleaning the floor and he got bored. And he took a hammer that he had and he started banging on the floor just because he was bored and it broke through. And they came over and they opened up that floor that the kid had broken through. And underneath they found a chamber that had 1,000 ancient artifacts in it. Under this floor, a 13-year-old girl from Toledo, Ohio, brought to Dr. Barkay a tiny fragment that looked like a cigarette butt, about that big. What she found is one of the greatest archaeological discoveries in history, for Christians anyway. They found that that little scroll was wrapped around another little scroll. And when they unwrapped those, when they finally figured out how to do it, they were made out of silver. When they finally figured out how to do it, they found the oldest copy of verses from the Old Testament of the Bible yet discovered. They were 400 years earlier than the Dead Sea Scrolls. Here's the thing. We think we're smarter than God. We think that because you can't prove something from the Bible that it must not be true. We like to think that we're our own little gods and we'll find these things out. We can discover anything. We can do anything. That thinking has led to millions and millions and millions of deaths. Listen, God addresses that too, our thinking on this stuff. Proverbs 18:2, New Living Translation. Fools have no interest in understanding. They only want to air their own opinions. See, opinions said that the sun was the center of the universe and went around the earth. And opinions said that you didn't have to wash your hands under running water. But God said, you guys are wrong. Make no mistake about this, guys. All these scientific discoveries, all these archaeological finds, all these historical facts are absolutely, totally, and completely useless and meaningless if you're a Christian. If you're a Christian, you don't need things outside the Bible to prove that the Bible is true. And if you do, I suggest you do what the Bible says to do and examine yourselves to see if you really belong to Jesus Christ. If you need something outside of God's Word to prove to you that God's Word is real, there's a problem. If you're a Christian, you don't need outside evidence, guys. You believe it because God put His Spirit in your heart, in your life. John 20:29. Jesus said, because you have seen me, you believe. But those who believe without seeing, they're the ones that are blessed. Jesus also said this in the Bible 2,000 years ago. Listen, just because it hasn't come true yet doesn't make it a lie. What Jesus said is, I'm coming back. And when I come back this time, I'm not going to be the little lamb that you lead to the sacrifice. When I come back this time, I'm coming back as a warrior. And I'm going to set things right. And you better know who I am when I come back. Listen, if you don't know Jesus as your Lord and Savior, you may never hear a message again. You may never be back in church again. You might not live to see tomorrow. You don't want to face eternity without knowing Christ. Just because He hasn't come back yet. Just like all these scientific discoveries and archaeological finds doesn't mean that it's not a fact. He's going to come back. The Bible tells us so. Not one word of the Bible has ever been proven wrong. Not one word. If you don't know Jesus, this is your chance to come down here and get right with Christ. You might not have another, guys. He loves you. You know, we've heard that so many times. He loves me. He died on the cross, blah, blah, blah. Listen, He died on the cross. We did this at BYF. I'm going to use Alexis again. Thanks, Alexis. Listen, here's what happened. Let's say God comes down and He says to, I'm going to use Lisa and Rachel, sorry, because Lisa's here. Let's say God comes down and says, see all these people? Hey, listen, Lisa, you know Hitler, you know all these guys, you know all the stuff that's going on, you know the child rapist that lives next door? Listen, I'm going to save them all, but here's what it's going to cost you. I'm going to have to kill your daughter, Rachel. Now it becomes personal, doesn't it? See, this is what God did. He took His Son and He hung Him on that cross so you would never have to pay the price that you owe for the sins that you've committed. That's what happened. Listen, guys, Jesus Christ loves you and He is coming back. I love you guys. Thanks, Helen.